The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, Democrats in Congress continue their efforts to push a massive spending bill. The average American, not sold on the idea.
The more people learn about this bill, the more the support for it drops.
Texas Congressman Van Taylor, fresh back from a visit to the border, gives us an update.
Biden is releasing tens of thousands of illegal aliens who are COVID positive into our country.
Attorney General Merrick Garland's effort to use the Patriot Act against school parents is not going over well.
In the First Amendment context, we talk about the chill to speech.
We'll take a closer look.
A parent's going to have to think twice about stepping into the public comment line to get up and speak.
China is growing increasingly assertive toward Taiwan. Is America prepared?
If we get into a serious conflict with China, we need to recognize that Russia will be closely involved.
I'm Mark Davison for Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live 7 to 10 Central on 660 AM The Answer in Dallas, or whenever you're online at 660amtheanswer.com. My home station is also easy to get on your handheld device through the TuneIn Radio app. Take a moment to follow us on Twitter at Town Hall Review. And while you're there, if you're so inclined, you can follow me as well on Twitter at Mark Davis. The big issue facing nearly every American family today is inflation. Inflation of the sort we have not seen in well over a decade. Gas prices are soaring, supply chains are delayed, the ports are backing up, and that's only going to make inflation worse. And yet the president, along with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, continue to press a spending bill with a $3.5 trillion price tag. Economist Stephen Moore joined Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer, in Chicago.
This is a lie that's being told by that Captain Kangaroo impersonator. So I guess the D.C. press corps does a better job of selling that lie along with all of the other lies Nancy Pelosi once sold.
I don't understand your anger and why you're railing at this. Do you not understand that all of this is free?
Yes, come on.
Yeah. You're getting with the times. Look, I think the economy is in big trouble right now. I think we're seeing supply chain problems all over the world. We've got an energy crisis. We've got an inflation crisis. We've got a border crisis. I woke up this morning and think, my God, what's happening to our country? And the idea that we're going to take the current situation we have and add $4 or $5 trillion of debt onto that is the nuttiest idea I have ever heard. I mean, is this country crazy? And the answer is no. Nancy Pelosi, I love that clip you played from her. Gee, we're just not a good job of marketing what we're doing. Yes, they're doing a fine job. Americans understand what they're trying to do, and Americans are turning against it. The more people learn about this bill, the more the support for it drops, and for good reason. You see, by the way, I believe I'm making a prediction on your show that within about 6 weeks, you're going to be paying $5 a gallon for gasoline into the Chicago area. Because the prices are going up all over the world because there's a shortage of oil. Gee, why is there a shortage of oil? Oh, yeah, that's right. Because Joe Biden doesn't want to produce it. And did you see Jen Psaki the other day was saying, she was asked about this. She said, well, this is just the cost we have to pay to deal with climate change. I'm like, gee, they didn't tell us that in the campaign.
No. And then store shelves are empty. I mean, staples that you normally get. I had to go to 3 grocery stores to find what I needed yesterday. Yep. And that scares me to the bone.
It should. We're going to see, we are going to start to see shortages. There are now 50 ships, cargo ships, off the coast of California, off the coast of Long Beach, that cannot dock because they don't have the workers to unload the docks. By the way, this is a great example of how unions can just screw things up. We should have dock workers 24/7, unloading this stuff. It's because of the dock workers are one of the most powerful unions in America. They're only going 8 or 10 hours a day. So you got these ships out there that are just sitting there waiting in the water. Some have been there for days and weeks, and it's causing big problems. You know, remember that I think we're all old enough to remember the Cabbage Patch dolls, and everybody wanted, and people were paying, you know, $100 for a Cabbage Patch doll. You're going to have a toy shortage. I hate to tell, I'm not trying to be the Grinch here, folks, but, you know, get your Christmas shopping done early this year, because the shelves, I think you're spot on, Amy. I think that a lot of these shelves are going to be empty.
You know, on the energy piece you mentioned, Steve, Emmanuel Macron, of all people, announcing France will invest €1 billion, or whatever their currency is, I don't remember, euros.
Thanks. I guess they're euros, yeah.
Yeah. In nuclear power by the end of this decade. Now, he started his presidency wanting to shut 14 reactors and cut nuclear's contribution to France's energy mix from 75 to 50% by 2035. Now he's in full reverse. You know why? Of course, you know why. Because renewables aren't delivering the energy that France needs to power its economy.
Here's the other amazing thing. There's a natural gas shortage in the world because guess who's not producing as much natural gas? The United States. Right. And so the Europeans are now getting almost all of their natural gas from guess what country?
Russia.
And so they just, by the way, great news. The pipeline is finally finished. Oh, no, not the Keystone pipeline. The Nord Stream pipeline, which connects Siberia with Germany. Uh-huh. So there was an article in Financial Times on Friday, and I'll quote it. This is a direct quote. They said, Western Europe is now, quote, hostage to Putin for their energy. Now, think about that. Is that the dumbest thing you've ever heard? I mean, Putin is going to be the richest person in the world thanks to Joe Biden.
While the administration is focused on this massive spending bill, the elite media outlets are doing a good job ignoring things like the rise of China. They're doing even better ignoring the crisis on our southern border. Congressman Van Taylor of the 3rd Congressional District here in Texas, just north of the Dallas Metro. He's back from a trip to the southern border and visited my program to give us a report. When did you go and what did you do?
Was there on Monday. Went and toured the Donna processing facility. Went and saw an outdoor processing facility underneath the International Bridge near McAllen. And then went on the riverine patrol with the state troopers, the Texas Department of Public Safety riverine patrol, and tour with them. And, you know, I actually started defending our border 25 years ago as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Marine Corps. And it's the worst I've ever seen it. Biden has completely destroyed border security. He's turned the Border Patrol from a patrol into a processing agency, and you know that's morale is low because they're not doing their job anymore. They're not defending our border. They're not protecting America.
Those words, the specific word patrol implies patrol, watchful eyes preventing illegal activity. Processing, it means we know they're coming. We're going to let them come and just enter them into the pipeline where their expectation is they'll be processed, given some vague court date in the distant, uncertain future, and then vanish into the tapestry of America until they can wait to be legalized, naturalized, and be voting happy voting Democrats.
Yeah, and in the meantime, you know, the Border Patrol told me that approximately 25% of the people crossing are COVID positive, and so we're literally releasing the Biden is releasing tens of thousands of illegal aliens who are COVID positive into our country. just incredible. I mean, completely irresponsible on Biden's part. You know, and furthermore, the cartels control every square inch south of the border, and they are looking for where we're going and what we're doing. And they're using the human smuggling operation to smuggle drugs across. So they're, you know, flowing human smuggling on one side, and then they're on the other side, they're putting drugs across. And that's affecting our communities right here in DFW. One of the sheriffs was saying that, you know, the cost of, you know, a hit of fentanyl has dropped from $50 in January to $15 in June. And that's a result of Biden, you know, helping the cartels to do human smuggling, and then they're exploiting that and taking advantage of it and then doing more drug smuggling.
This is an admittedly terrible problem. And if it had been terrible forever in kind of a linear fashion, we would just kind of view it as something that's been bad that we hope we can make better. But the added pain of this is that 2 years ago, we had one of the most secure borders in recent American history, didn't we?
Yes, we did. And that's and that's why I said, you know, in 25 years, it's the worst I've ever seen it. You know, the massive humanity that's flowing across, the humanitarian crisis. And we, you know, President Trump, I worked with him to get it under control. You know, the Democrats didn't want to help at any point. They, you know, President Trump had to go on his own and make his own mark. And but he got it under control. You know, he started building the wall. I mean, what's upsetting as a taxpayer is to see, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars of materials stacked up, you know, 20 feet high for acres and acres that's ready to build a wall. I mean, going, you know, driving along the border, see, here's the wall, and then, oh, they stopped. And, you know, Biden intentionally, you know, maliciously said, we're not going to build a wall, no wall. And so he's stopped building the wall, which we know works. I'll share something something that, you know, I saw on the border, and that was when I was in the Riverine Patrol. There was a private landowner on the American side who built a 3-mile length of fence, and he built it because and he built it a couple of years ago. And the reason he built it was that he was having problems with drug smugglers hiding drugs in his cane fields. And when he would go to burn his cane fields, the drug smugglers would come and threaten his workers and say, I'm going to kill you or we're going to hurt you or you need to let us get our drugs out of here. And he also had human smugglers were using his cane fields to hide, to stash human beings. And he was finding bodies in the fields. And sometimes they were being burned to death while he was burning his field. So he just said, that's enough. I've had enough of this. He built a wall and it worked. The wall worked. I mean, he built 3 miles of wall, and the drug smuggling and the human smuggling, you know, basically ground down to almost nothing on that section of the border. So we know walls work. We know they're effective. President Trump was doing it, and President Biden said, no, no wall. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't care. I don't care if it costs money to stop building the wall. You know, and the problem here is that liberals care more about illegal aliens than they do about Americans. If you care about Americans, you want to stop drugs from coming in. If you care about Americans, you want to stop people who are COVID positive from coming into the country. If you care about Americans, you don't want to have illegal aliens coming into this country as fast as they can get in here. It's time to put America first again.
Coming up, turning the Patriot Act on parents?
If this isn't a deliberate attempt to chill parents from showing up at school board meetings for their elected school boards, I don't know what is.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis filling in for Hugh this week. This past year has been a real wake-up for parents who have their kids in public schools. Oh, they've woken up, so to speak, to find their school boards are essentially undermining parental authority. So now they're not just waking up, they're speaking up. Some of these school board meetings have been admittedly loud. Some of the parents have been occasionally disruptive. But what is with Attorney General Merrick Garland threatening the use of the Patriot Act against parents? Senator Josh Hawley got to the heart of the matter in a question this week to Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco.
As the Attorney General's memorandum made quite clear, spirited debate is welcome, is a hallmark of this country. It's something we all should engage in.
And no, I don't think so, Ms. Monaco. With all due respect, it didn't make it quite clear. It doesn't define those terms, nor does it define harassment or intimidation. In the First Amendment context, we talk about the chill to speech. If this isn't a deliberate attempt to chill parents from showing up at school board meetings for their elected school boards, I don't know what is. I mean, I'm not aware of anything like this in American history. We're talking about the FBI. You're using the FBI to intervene in school board meetings. That's extraordinary.
Pete Peterson of the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy joined my colleague Seth Liebsen on AM 960, The Patriot, out of Phoenix.
See, I think that was the point of this memo in a way, the chilling effect. We can talk
about
that.
Absolutely.
I think it was directed more towards parents than the local police office. In fact, I bet if I went to my local police agency, they would know, they would have less information about this than most. They would know less about it than parents. I believe it was directed at two parents to chill them, to shut them up, to scare them.
I couldn't agree more. This is really a chilling effect on what's to come on those parents, that as some of these policies roll out, whether it's around masks or whether it's around curriculum or whether it's around vaccination, a parent's going to have to think twice now about stepping into the public comment line to get up and speak. And I think what's related to that is how vague the language is in this memo.
That's the worst part of it, quite frankly. Right, right.
You know?
Right, right. What if an overeager official school board or enforcement takes it just a little more seriously than others? By the way, I have to say, this is the same Merrick Garland everyone was telling us was such the great moderate who would balance things out. Remember that?
Well, and how many moderates in this administration, people we thought were moderate,
right,
have turned, you know, quite radical?
Gone native, as we used to say. Can I say that anymore? I don't know if I can say. Can I? I don't know. Can I say?
Well, yeah. Exactly. I mean, even, again, just pulling from the text of this memo, threats against public servants are not only illegal, they run counter to our nation's core values. Well, what's a threat?
Exactly.
If I stand up at a school board meeting and say, I am running against you in the next election and I'm going to take you out, is that illegal?
Was it illegal for Chuck Schumer to say Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch were coming for you?
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right.
I don't think a parent has said anything so strong as that.
It really is disturbing. And I don't take the Attorney General to be a stupid person.
Nope.
And so I think vagueness is part of his purpose here. He wants people to be open, these words to be open to interpretation, because it will, as we agree, have a chilling effect on public engagement. And I will say, to borrow some terms from the left, this is not what democracy looks like.
Right.
For that full conversation with Pete Peterson, just go to townhallreview.com. While the administration is preoccupied with enormous spending and quieting First Amendment free expression for moms and dads, China is moving full speed ahead. Russia seems most pleased to lend them a hand. Retired General James Stavridis was a guest on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Taiwan is part of China, says Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. Put all that together and give me your reaction to everything you just heard.
No surprise. As you and I have discussed, one of the primary features of our time geopolitically is not just the rise of China, but the growing diplomatic speak word here alert, the growing condominium between China and Russia. Condominium in diplomacy is just a close alignment of interests, military activities, just short of a formal alliance. So no surprise there. Both those nations, China and Russia, see themselves drawing closer together. And Russia is simply highlighting this bright, shining red line that China has about Taiwan. Secondly, to General McChrystal, who's one of my very close friends, Stan's assessment is spot on about not just the members of Congress, but everybody in the interagency who has not done a deep dive into not just China, but particularly the Taiwan scenario needs to. And that requires reading, study, thinking, looking at the right books, listening to the right experts, and above all, participating in the kind of exercises that you describe. So I think if you put those two things together, the one bell ringer in the back of your mind ought to be, you know, if we get into a serious conflict with China, we need to recognize that Russia will be closely involved. And that's something that features in the book 2034 as well.
You know, Admiral, it had not occurred to me until I read Risk. I had already read 2034, General McChrystal's new book is Risk, that we really ought to have, if not the president, then the vice president and the national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, along with Tony Blinken, running a Taiwan exercise along with Lloyd Austin, but members of Congress on armed services, because that is the likeliest geopolitical crisis of the first order that we face. Obviously, COVID came out of nowhere. It's a black swan. But we know that this is out there. We can run a couple of exercises on this. To your knowledge, has one been done involving senior players?
2 decades ago, I saw some exercises conducted by the Navy up in Newport, Rhode Island, that brought in some of those scenarios. And guess who played the president of the United States?
Newt
Gingrich.
Oh, Newt. Okay.
And, you know, Newt is deep, deep in history. He's very articulate. He played a terrific role. And so I think the idea of bringing particularly up and coming and higher level members of Congress and getting them in these war games makes a lot of sense. And the place to do it, Hugh, is actually not the Pentagon. It is, in fact, Newport, Rhode Island, the Naval War College, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, the Army War College, on and on. Those war colleges spend a lot of time in wargaming, exercising. They have all the expertise on site. They're actually pretty pleasant places to go for a long weekend and do something like this. I think a program along those lines would be terrific. And I would send a message to my good friend, the new Secretary of the Navy, Carlos Del Toro, and say, hey, take the lead on this and do it, because let's face it, it's primarily going to be a maritime scenario.
And Admiral, I think the most important hurdle to get over is to get people to believe this could happen.
Let's not underestimate the human tendency, Hugh, to believe that tomorrow is going to look just like today.
Coming up.
Their end game is to surpass the U.S. economically, militarily, technologically.
More on the emerging threat from China when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis, filling in for Hugh today. And it's all brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. So as we look at this threat from China from our last segment and consider what it means for the future, we would do well to take Admiral Stavridis seriously. Tomorrow very well may not look like today. And the sort of conflict we'll face is not going to look like the conflict of the past. Seth Jones is the Director of International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's got a new book out. It's called Three Dangerous Men, Russia, China, Iran, and the Rise of Irregular Warfare. He was a guest on my program. So the three dangerous men refer to people in the halls of power in Russia, China, and Iran, and the things that we have to worry about that are way different than tanks and troops and, you know, war the old-fashioned way. So let's just sort of take an overview of what irregular warfare is, and then we'll look inside each of these three regimes.
So irregular warfare is, as you know, very different from battles on, you know, physical battlefields between tanks and armies. Think Battle of Midway or you know, the battles in the Western Front during World War II. This is not how most of U.S.'s adversaries are planning to, or certainly currently conducting attacks against the U.S. The U.S. is far too strong. No one's going to take us on, not even the Chinese at this point. So what they're doing instead is operating through information and disinformation campaigns, support to proxies, including terrorist organizations, covert action, and economic coercion. These are all instruments of warfare below the threshold of conventional or nuclear war. And this is what we call irregular or asymmetric warfare. This is what these countries are doing.
I've spent my entire life comfortable, confident with the notion that we are the preeminent military on the planet. And the best kind of military is the one you never have to use. Strength is what keeps things that way. No war ever broke out because America was too strong. Is our country similarly confident in this strange, foggy new world of irregular warfare, cyber stuff and information warfare? How are we doing on that front?
We're doing okay. We're not doing
well. not the answer I was looking for.
No.
Yikes. No. Okay, sorry. Very seriously. Go ahead.
I think where we're at, frankly, is we recognize to some degree these threats. We're just starting to get organized. The CIA just earlier this month announced the establishment of a broader CIA program and office to deal with the Chinese on intelligence collection. These are the kind of steps we need to start to take.
China, it's so weird. It's so schizophrenic. We're an active trading partner. We benefit greatly from our relationship with them. They benefit greatly from their relationship with us. Yet they are hacking the living daylights out of us individually, institutionally. About half of the FBI's current counterintelligence investigations involve China. What is the level of their malicious intent? I mean, so what are they up to? What is their end game?
Well, I mean, their end game is to surpass the U.S. economically, militarily, technologically. And I think there's no country in the world that has right now the innovation that the United States has. So what's the Chinese strategy for trying to surpass us? It's to steal, and it's to steal large amounts of information from U.S. military companies, their entire fifth-generation stealthy aircraft, the Chinese aircraft, is based almost entirely on stealing technology from the F-35. This is the Chinese J-31. They steal from Google. You know, these are cyber attacks or insider threats. But I want to give two very, very quick examples of the pressure the Chinese put on us. The first comes directly from the great state of Texas, and this is the Chinese reaction to the general manager of the Houston Rockets, who supports protesters in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
What's the Chinese reaction? They take they cancel all of the NBA's television deals in China, which amounts to hundreds of millions of dollars in losses for the NBA, and that's how they retaliated against U.S. businesses. They don't like what some in the NBA were saying about Hong Kong, or you could expand that to Tibet or the Chinese repression in Xinjiang, and they react against American companies that are trying to sell goods and services in China. They've done it elsewhere. They do this with Hollywood movie producing studios. I can guarantee, as I talk to producers in Hollywood, any U.S. corporation that tries to sell movies to the 1.4 billion Chinese, if they have a Chinese enemy, they will not get the Communist Party to sell their movies.
Coming up.
There are only four countries here in the whole world, including China, North Korea, and the United States, that allow taking a baby's life all the way to the moment of birth. It's barbaric, the society that has built up around Roe.
Abortion before the High Court. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis filling in. The Supreme Court has earlier this month begun its fall term. It is sure to be an action-packed session, but there's one case that really stands out. In Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, the Supreme Court will be considering the constitutionality of a Mississippi law that prohibits abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. The litigants have laid the groundwork and in their amicus briefs explicitly asked the court to overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. The case is set to be heard on December 1st. Hugh turned to John Bursch with the Alliance Defending Freedom.
This is the year. We thought 1992 was the year that Roe v. Wade would be reversed. I think this is the year in the Dobbs case. But I just read a brief, an amicus brief, filed that makes this argument. Without Roe and Casey, women athletes would not be able to participate fully and equally in athletics. This is like Terry McAuliffe saying, the election of Glenn Youngkin will mean an end to abortion. The hysteria on the left, John Birch, I have not ever seen anything its equal.
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable, and it's completely false. There's also a brief filed on the Mississippi side of the case, a friend of the court brief, by hundreds and hundreds of women who talked about how, whether in athletics or their professional life, they were able to not murder their baby and still go forward and have successful athletic careers, professional lives, meaningful lives. It's not a either-or proposition. You can both keep your child and still have a wonderful life. If anything, as you know, children make your life better.
So, John, give people an idea of when Dobbs will be heard, what ADF's role in it is, and what your hope for it. I don't think people should expect much change in the abortion regime of the United States. I believe, for example, in California, where it's a constitutional right to an abortion, it's not going to change. But when Roe and Casey are gone, it will simply be back to the states to decide when and where abortions occur. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's the important thing for people to understand, is that the Constitution is silent about abortion or anything related to abortion. And when the Constitution is silent on a subject in our federalist system, that means that states and local governments get to decide how to regulate it. And so overturning Roe, which was completely made up out of whole cloth, doesn't have anything to do with our constitutional text or history, would simply return that choice to the states. So the specific law at issue in Dobbs is a 15 weeks law. It says that you cannot take the life of your child after it's reached 15 weeks gestation. And to do so is really barbaric. At 15 weeks, the baby is fully formed. It sucks its thumb. It blinks its eyelids. It can taste the food that its mother is eating. It's right on that line where it can possibly feel pain if it's hurt in some way. It can absolutely respond to external stimuli. All it has to do is grow a little bit bigger. If you saw the baby at 15 weeks, no one would deny that this is a human child. And yet under Roe versus Wade and Casey, that would be an unconstitutional law. That's what the lower courts were forced to say. And so that's what forces the Supreme Court to address this issue.
If someone in Mississippi shoots a woman who's pregnant with a 15-week baby and they both die, are they charged with one or two homicides?
Yes, a 15-week baby, they would almost certainly be charged for taking two lives because the criminal law recognizes this. Virtually all laws recognize this. That's why if you're pregnant at 15 weeks and the doctor does something to botch your pregnancy where your baby dies, you've got a cause of action against the doctor, too. There are only four countries here in the whole world, including China, North Korea, and the United States, that allow taking a baby's life all the way to the moment of birth. It's barbaric, the society that has built up around Roe. So all the briefs are in. The Mississippi Attorney General's office has filed two briefs. The abortion clinic has filed one. Amazingly, the friend of the court briefs, the amici briefs, there were far more on the pro-life side than the pro-choice side, which is unusual. Outnumbered them about 83 to 53. The oral argument will take place December 1st. It's going to be a limited courtroom because of COVID. Right now, this term, the Supreme Court justices are only allowing the lawyers to be in the courtroom and a few press people, and that's it. But it's going to be streamed live by by audio. So on December 1st, everybody should be tuning in to hear how the justices deal with this question. As a constitutional matter, this is a slam dunk, easy decision. Roe versus Wade, as I mentioned, is completely fabricated. It has no basis in the Constitution. As a political matter, however, there's obviously a lot of pressure here. And so we've got to hope that the justices do the right thing this time. The last time in Casey, when they were confronted with this situation, they did not have the courage of their convictions to follow the Constitution.
Now, John, I am an optimist because of the Chief Justice's concurrence in Citizens United in 2011. If you read that concurrence about stare decisis, this is clearly a case where stare decisis has failed to settle the law. And as a result, the previous case decision that was intended to do so must be removed as it continues to be an irritant in the governing of the United States. Do you agree that I think the Chief Justice, if he follows his concurrence in Citizens United, will vote to overturn Roe and Casey?
Yeah, I think that's right. And for those who don't know what stare decisis is, that's simply the judicial policy of following an already decided decision unless it's clearly wrong, because you need stability in the law. But at some point, when a prior decision is so wrong that it's contradictory of the Constitution, we can't be slaves to the decision as opposed to the Constitution, because then that's putting something aside from the Constitution above the Constitution. For example, if the Constitution said the sky is blue and the Supreme Court in 1973 said the sky is green, but you couldn't allow that decision to stand because it's clearly wrong. And based under the Chief Justice's concurrence in Citizens United, Roe is one of those cases that was clearly wrong. It has no basis in the constitutional text, history, tradition, and it's a policy that has proven completely terrible for the country, 60 million deaths, but also for the judiciary. The reason that the court system is always embroiled in these pro-life laws and litigation over them is because the court in Roe inappropriately inserted itself into the political process and took something that should have been left to the democratic process to decide and constitutionalized it. Even Justice Ginsburg, who was a passionate supporter of abortion rights, said that Roe was poorly decided and probably unnecessary.
And John, if they don't overturn it now, it will never be overturned, in my view, because it is whatever argument there is for stare decisis gets stronger every year. I don't think that there is one, but if they this will be third strike and we're out, in my view. Do you agree with me on the stakes?
It would be really difficult. I'm not one who ever says never to never, because anything is possible. But I think the hill gets a little bit steeper if they would issue an opinion that somehow upholds the core of Roe. Now, if the majority opinion simply says that Mississippi's law is valid and it doesn't reaffirm Roe and Casey, then I think that's a signal to us that we need to keep picking away and that there could be another case coming up in another year or two. So I wouldn't get discouraged if this doesn't turn out to be the one.
Coming up, the propaganda machine we see in media today.
95% of the content that is developed are developed by essentially people that are left-wing, and it's absolute poison.
Congressman Devin Nunes in the final segment of the Town Hall Review. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. A stark warning from the former software chief for the Pentagon. We're so far behind China, he says, that we haven't got a fighting chance.
It should be a wake-up call to everybody.
The Biden administration is focused, except, on something else, using their narrow majorities to ram through a radical agenda.
I don't think Democrats understand just how upset and motivated they are making an awful lot of independents and maybe even a few Democrats.
We'll also take a look at the Christian call to submission.
When you're a leader who submits to the ones over you, you are then more gentle and more patient and more understanding to those who are under you.
We have all this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis. Over the course of these last 2 years, we see numerous indicators that this nation we love may be transforming right before our eyes. And we see a media establishment that seems intent on helping make that transformation happen. Sebastian Gorka turned to California Congressman Devin Nunes.
Where does this end? What is the likely scenario? Does it become socialism after the last year and a half with COVID and people, you know, genuflecting at the altar of fear that Fauci created? Are we going to comply? You are the antithesis of the career politician. You're a farmer. You're a citizen politician. From that vantage point, what is your expectation? Where does this end up, Congressman Nunes?
Well, if you look at what's happened throughout COVID, the socialist states, so-called blue states, have become more and more socialist, bordering on totalitarianism type of, you know, tactics that they're using. You're going to see more conservatives, Republicans, independents who want to live in freedom are going to leave places like California. So people are voting with their feet. They're moving with their feet. They're setting up a very dangerous situation here where we have a series of blue socialist states and red free states. And at the same time, we've got the challenge of it's not just the content everywhere I go. And it's what I wrote in my book, Countdown to Socialism. I wrote it before the last election in 2020. But now, sadly, it's more relevant than what it was then, because I wrote this before the Hunter Biden laptop from hell story was purged from the internet. I wrote it before Parler was nuked from the internet by Bezos and these tech tyrant oligarchs. So I think where we go from here is it still gets down to kind of that, how do you reach the middle? How do you reach the family that just want to take their kid to soccer practice,
yeah,
that just want to go to a high school football game, that they're not going to listen to your show, they're not going to watch Fox News or Newsmax. They don't want to be in politics, but sadly what's happening to them is they're being poisoned by this propaganda machine. 95% of the content that is developed are developed by essentially people that are left-wing, hard left-wing, or working for people that are left-wing, and it's propaganda. It's no different than the Chinese Communist Party propaganda, no different than Putin's propaganda, no different than what you saw in the old Soviet Union and their satellite states like your former home country in Eastern Europe. But now we're in a more dangerous time where social media is really determining what people receive on their handheld devices or iPads or desktops.
Right.
And that's what's scary. That's where it comes to 99.9% of the information that's getting out to the soccer mom or that person I just described is absolute poison.
There's more of that conversation with Congressman Devin Nunes. Go to townhallreview.com. Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, and special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Pochon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. And let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Mark Davis, in for Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us today.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.